It's always a pleasure for me to have a part in this lecture program. I appreciate those of you who are here, and we're having a rich feast. I was greatly thrilled with the speech that Brother Vion made to us a while ago. He's not rusty anymore. I'm going to have to change that. I reciprocate the very kind remarks personally made by Brother Tom. Tom and Kate are very special to us. As he said, we've been together on happy occasions and sad ones. I think I've been to Blackfoot 7 or 8 times to preach and help them the best I knew how. I'm glad, though, for the opportunity to talk to you about foreign evangelism. This has been a soapbox of mine for a long time. It's been a passion in my life. When I was in my middle teens, we had a preacher to come to Hopewell, Virginia, where I grew up, by the name of Arlie Moore. He was a Texan, and he preached there a while. Took great interest in the young people. We had some training classes. I worked one summer for him in his office after my junior year in high school. And he had some old gospel advocates and firm foundations. And he wanted me to go through them and make a card file, we didn't have computers then, of articles, list them alphabetically so he would have that for reference material. And he did it not only to help himself, but he did it to help me. And in perusing those periodicals, I came across information about brethren going to other countries to preach. And I expressed some interest in that. Brother Moore had been preaching before he came to Hopewell in Alaska. And that was before Alaska was a state. It was a territory. And he had some pictures of his work there, and sometimes he'd take me home for lunch at his house. And he had some albums, and I'd look through those and the pictures of his baptizing people in cold water in Alaska. And there was something about that built a fire in me. And I had already made up my mind by then I was going to preach the gospel. And I determined that I was going to spend part of my time preaching the gospel beyond the borders of this country. Before I married my first Bobby, we talked about our plans in our life together. And one of the things we talked about was spending time preaching the gospel beyond the boundaries of this country. And we prayed that the Lord would open doors for us to go to other places and preach. There are several men here in this audience who have had that same passion and have preached in a number of other places where we have not had the opportunity to go. But the Lord has abundantly answered those prayers to open doors to go preach the gospel in other places. So this is a topic that's of special interest to me. The blessed gospel is for all. When we were making our plans in 1957 to go to Norway, and I was trying to raise support for that work, I encountered an attitude among brethren that surprised me. I wrote a number of letters asking brethren to support us in our work, most of which were never answered. And when I talked to people about the work and asked them for their support and their help, I found brethren saying, "Why do you want to go over there and preach?" I was living in Atlanta, Georgia then. They said, "Aren't there souls in Georgia that ought to be saved?" And I said, "Yes, of course." "Well, isn't a soul saved in Georgia worth just as much as one in Norway?" And of course the answer to that is yes. But the difference was that there were people who could carry on the work in Atlanta, Georgia, after I was gone. And to my knowledge, there weren't any New Testament Christians in the land of the midnight sun. And that was answer enough for me. You know, there's a song we sing, "Far and near the fields are teeming, there's a land that says, the blessed gospel is for all." There's one land that says, "Say not the heathen are at home, beyond we have no call? For why should we be blessed alone? The blessed gospel is for all. And I took that seriously. Jesus charged his disciples to go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. Matthew's account said, go make disciples and baptize them. And he said, go teach and make disciples, baptizing them. And then he said, teach them to observe all I have commanded you. And he just got through commanding them to go into all the world and preach the gospel. So that charge is ours as well. In Romans 1:16, Paul said that the gospel is God's power to save both the Jew and the Greek, the Jew and the Gentile. It's the power of God to save everyone. In Acts, the 10th chapter, when Peter came to the house of Cornelius, he said, God has showed me that I should not call any man common or unclean, but in every nation he that feareth God and worketh righteousness is accepted with him. The Bible tells about Jeremiah, who decided he wasn't going to preach anymore. He said, the people aren't paying any attention. Brother Aaron, I guess they were apathetic. They weren't listening. They even persecuted him. He said, I'm going to quit. But he said, when I said that, there was a fire shut up in my bones. And I could not contain. There needs to be a fire in our bones about preaching the gospel. In Isaiah, the 2nd chapter, when he prophesied the establishment of the mountain of the Lord's house, he said, all nations shall flow unto it. And even earlier than that, when God spoke to Abraham, he said, in thee shall all nations of the earth be blessed. So the charge is worldwide. There are a number of things, though, that hinder foreign evangelism. I want to spend a little time talking about some things that hinder foreign evangelism. Jesus said, the harvest is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Yesterday we heard an excellent address from Brother Halbrook about the work in the Philippines, but he prefaced all of that by a good discussion of Matthew 7, or Matthew 9, verses 37 and 38. We need more preachers in this country. That goes without saying. But think about the rest of the world. We have 5 to 6% of the world's population in the United States. That means that 94% of the people of the world live outside this country. And yet it would probably be a fair assessment to say that by far the greatest part of the effort made to reach the people of the world with the gospel is being addressed to the 6% that live here in this country. All there are native men in other countries that are preaching the gospel and doing it well. But there are a few Americans, as blessed as we are with the prosperity we have enjoyed, and all of the American dream, Brother Flatt's not bad, because with the financial ability that we have been able, I believe, in the providence of God, to see that the gospel is spread all around the world, but we have too few who are busy at it, and those who are present in these other nations working are spread thin in the work that they're doing. What we need is some more men to stand up and say, here am I. Send me. I'm ready. When I got ready to go to Norway, my mother wasn't much in favor of my going. In fact, she was so disturbed about it, my father called me. That's back in the days when we didn't make phone calls much. We wrote letters. But he called me. He said, you need to come home, son, talk to your mama. But she's really upset about you going to Norway. So I went home, spent a couple of days. And she said, son, why in the world do you want to go over there and preach? And she asked me that same question about souls in Georgia being as much, whether it's worth as much as those in another country. And she said, it's cold over there, I understand. And it was. And she said, besides that, your wife is pregnant. And she was. He was 6 months pregnant when we sailed from New York. And our oldest son was born there. And then she threw a heavy one at me. She said, "What if your grandmammy died? She lived with us while you're over there and you can't get home." And I said, "Well, if I don't get to see her again in Virginia, I'll see her on the other side." Now, my mother apologized for that later on. She grew a lot as a Christian. And she said, "The truth was, I just didn't want my baby boy across the ocean." And that was the size of it. But we need more men to say, "Here am I, send me." She said, "Why does it have to be you?" And I said, "Well, why not me? Why not me? Let's go do this work." And so we went and we did the very best we could. Brother Heath Robertson's here today. And he's spent some time in Norway. His wife was born over there. And her good family, the Bunning family. She's the granddaughter of Tom Bunning, the daughter of Terrell Bunning. They spent many years in that country preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. There are open doors in some places that may not be open long. We have lived to see doors close in parts of the world where we can't get in now to preach the gospel, and where there are great difficulties for those who do manage to get in clandestinely. But doors open and doors close, and the providence of God works wondrously in that regard, and we must not discount that. But there are many hindrances. Apathy is one of them. Brother Bion talked about that a while ago. It sort of reminds me of a statement I read about the war that we were in Iraq. It said the Marines are at war and Americans are at the mall. Pretty well described, isn't it? So what? Whatever becomes the attitude. But there are other hindrances that are involved in preaching the gospel in other places. There were hindrances in the first century to the spread of the gospel. The gospel took root in a pagan society where persecution was prevalent. It was not easy. Those in the first century had to overcome prejudice, years of built-up tradition among the Jewish people and in the pagan world, all that attended idolatry, the evils that were associated with that. They had to face and overcome that. And so we still have hindrances and obstacles in our work of preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. And yet, these hindrances can be met. We have to face them. We have to overcome them. But whatever you do, don't you be one of those hindrances. I heard a preacher's wife, he was a fairly well-known preacher, say one time when she had a son who was a preacher, and he had thought about going to Africa to preach, and she discouraged him from going. She said, "I just don't intend to have my grandchildren across the ocean." Don't you be a hindrance. I have two sons, one preaches and one's an elder. But if either one of them decided they wanted to go to the backside of the world, I hope I would have the grace not to try to discourage them from doing that. So I want to ask you parents a question. Would you encourage your children to prepare to spend part of their life somewhere else in the world preaching gospel? Would you do that? How about you elders? Are you encouraging preachers to be a part of the work of spreading the gospel in other places? If not, why not? How about it, preachers? Are you preaching on this? Are you preaching on the need for worldwide evangelism? If you're not, why not? Now, who ought to go? Who should go? Obviously, everybody can't. Everybody can't go for a number of reasons. Everybody's not suited to go in the next place. I suggest to you that men ought to go to preach in other places who are prepared to go. I was 27 years old when I went to Norway. I was young. But I'd had a little bit of experience already in preaching. I'd done some local work in three places by that time. And that, I think that gives you a little bit of an edge. I do not believe that young men who had no experience ought to go, not to live in another country to preach. I think you need some time to mature. You need some time to grow, to learn. You need some time to establish your credibility, and that will be helpful to you when you get ready to raise support. Men ought to go who are prepared. Who are prepared not only doctrinally and morally, but who are prepared to face a different culture. You have to learn another language if you're going to go to another place to live. I either had to learn Norwegian to come home. Well, there was no need for me to stay if I didn't. And you need to be prepared to do that. And if you can do some of that before you go, well and good. If you can't, do it when you get there, but take time to do that. You need to be prepared for the work that you are going to do. You need to have families that are equally committed to the work you're going to do. Your wife, your children, if you have such. They need to be a part of the decision. They need to be just as much caught up and desirous of going to do this work as you are. And if that's not the case, you will have hindrances, you'll have problems when you get there. If your wife is a wimp or a whiner, and she can't adjust to changes, and she can't be that far away from mama for several years of her life, you don't need to go. You need to help send somebody else to go. Your wife is one of these that worries about having a bad hair day. I guarantee you if she goes to Romania, she's going to have some bad hair days. And if she goes to the Philippines, she's going to have some. And the toilet facilities over there are not going to be to her liking. And some of the kitchens she will see. Bodie and Tessie are here. They're so gracious as hosts. But they know how people live in the Philippines, and they visited among us here. In fact, I asked Bodie, after his first visit over here, I said, "What was one of your first impressions of the lives of American brethren that you meet here?" And you know what his answer was? He said, "Opulence. You're not going to find any opulence there. So you need to be ready to make some changes and some adjustments. And preachers, you're going to have to change to a different culture too. It's not always going to be easy." I remember after I got to Norway, I'd come home after being in town and encountering several roadblocks, the things that we needed to get arranged. And I'd come home and we'd laugh about the strange ways of these people until we were listening to the Armed Forces Network from Stuttgart, Germany one time. And Tennessee Ernie Ford had a message aimed at the service families over there to help them get along with the Europeans, and he said something that got my attention. He said, "Pea pickers, when you're in the other feller's country, you're the foreigner." And I got to thinking about that. You know what? Those people I was laughing about at supper were home. I was the foreigner. They didn't need to change. I was the one that needed to change. Now, there's some customs that you can't adapt because they're wrong. But there are some adjustments that you have to make. And if you can't do that, don't go. We need men to go who are stable. Stable. You know, a man who has never done a successful work in his life in this country is not going to do a successful work anywhere else in the world either. We need men who have their feet flat on the ground and have had their nose in the book and know what the book says and are able to convey it. You're going to encounter situations where you're going to have to know some things off the top of your head and you're not going to have much time to research it. I got to a place in the Philippines one time, just got off the bus. Some of the brethren met me in Angeles City. And they took me to the place where the brethren were meeting. They were already there when I got there. And on the way between the bus station and where we went in the jeepney I was riding in, he said, He said, Brother Adams, we need you this morning to talk to us about the church, the falling, going into restoration. Just like that. So about 10 minutes later, I was up talking about the church, the falling, going into restoration. Thankfully, I'd studied a little bit about that. But if I hadn't, I wouldn't have had any soap when I got there. We need men who have had enough experience that they can improvise. We need men who do not have hobbies. I'm not talking about photography or sports or playing music. I'm talking about a different kind of hobby. Brethren in other parts of the world have been plagued by Americans who have taken every kind of a false notion that any brother ever thought of in this country, and they've transported it, exported it to other countries around the world, to the dismay and to the consternation of the brethren who live and work in those places. I cautioned Brother Rohde last night about indiscriminately inviting preachers from here to go to the Philippines. You need to know something about a fellow before you ask him to come. Because there have been men to go to that country and to Nigeria and South Africa and to Europe and other places around the world who didn't have their feet on the ground and who had a head full of squirrely notions. And when they got there, they wanted to convey all of that to the people in these places. Now, there's some problems about raising support to go. Oh, one more thing I've left out I need to say. If going to another country to preach, whether to live or to just on a short trip visit, I'm going to say a little more about that later. If this is just an adventure with you, you want an adventure at the expense of the brethren, forget it. Wait until you can go with proper motivation for making such a trip as that. The truth of the business is, there are adventures involved in foreign evangelism, but that's not the reason for going. Now, let's say just a little bit about problems about support in foreign evangelism. The Lord ordained, Paul said, that those who preach the gospel should live of the gospel. I don't see any boundaries involved, any national boundaries involved in that text or that context. Those who preach the gospel should live of it. And Paul demonstrated that or illustrated it in 1 Corinthians 9 from things from the Old Testament, how the oxen that tread out the corn, he said, should be allowed to eat. If I don't muzzle the ox that treads the corn. And the laborer is worthy of his hire. And he talked about the priesthood and how they were supplied by as a result of the service which they did. And then he talked about those who preach. And if you're going to go to another country to preach, you're going to have adequate support to do that. If you're going to go there to live, you need to do your homework before you go and find out something about the cost of living where you're going. And that's true in this country as well. If you're going to New England to live, it's going to take more for you to live in the northeast of this country than it does in Alabama, Tennessee, or Kentucky, or Texas. If you're going to live in certain metropolitan areas in this country, it's going to cost you more to live than it does in a more rural setting or where there are smaller cities. If you're going to Japan to live, it's going to cost you a whole lot of money. If you're going to Scandinavia, I would say that's an expensive place to live. It's not a third world country. And Western Europe is the same way. It's going to cost you some money to live. And so you need to do your homework and determine how much you're going to have. And you need to have adequate support before you go. And brethren need to understand that. Brethren here don't always understand that. Every country in the world is not on the same monetary system. And we have problems now. Our American dollar is devalued against the currencies of other countries. And this poses a serious problem for some of our brethren in other nations. When the dollar is devalued, they take a cut in pay. You may be sending the same number of dollars in a check or in a wire transfer to them, or however you send money to them. But they're going to have less to spend when they get it. Raising support is not always easy. Then there's the matter of the security of support being sent. Some brethren have difficulties with that. I've had several brethren to say, "Brother Adams, how's the best way to send support to a preacher in India or Philippines or South Africa or some other place? What's the best way to do that?" The best way I've found to do it, we help support some children in the Philippines, and we help support personally a preacher over there. In fact, he's my namesake. My name is Connie W., and they named him W. Connie. And I got to baptize him. My brother Ron's met him and tells me that he's doing a good job as an able preacher now. But we found that customer service at Walmart is about as handy as anything else. You can send a MoneyGram for $9 from Walmart, and they give you a reference number, and you provide that to whoever's on the receiving end of it. With that reference number, they can go to a bank and get the funds right away. They don't have, once they have that reference number in hand, they can do that. There have been checks that have been lost. There's some who for years have sent checks to people in different countries. Some of these have been lost. Some of them have been pilfered. Sometimes bank accounts have been exploited as a result of that. Brother Ron had a near disaster about a wire transfer service at the bank that he was using in Shepherdsville. And just the clerk in the bank or the person working in the bank happened to notice it and flag it. She thought it was unusual and just headed off a financial disaster for him with that. So that's a problem in sending support. If you're supporting preachers in other places, there's another issue that needs to be dealt with, and that's the timeliness of your support. When I was in Norway, we had support in 12 different places. None of them sent more than $50 a month. But we had most of the places that sent their support on time. Usually around the first of the month, I could count on it from all of these. I could count on it from all these places except for two churches. And they were nearly always late. I never knew when their support was going to come. And when you're in a foreign country and you're depending on the mail to provide your livelihood, and you have bills to pay and things that need to be done, it's important to be able to count on what you're to receive. If you're a treasurer in a church, would you take to heart what I'm saying about that? Or if you're an elder in the church, would you speak to the treasurer and be sure that if you're supporting men in other, whether it's in this country or some other country, be sure that they do this in a timely manner. It's so very important. Now, there's been some question raised over the years as to whether or not American churches ought to support native preachers in other countries. And there's some brethren who've made a pretty good case, pretty strong case, about how that might damage the local work. And there may be instances in which that's true. If American churches provide a native preacher working in his own culture, his own nation, with more support than ordinary folks around him have, that'd create envy and jealousy and cause his motives to be suspect. You're not doing him a service or a favor. You need to supply adequate support for him, what is needed for the work to be done. But you don't need to oversupply support. That's a detriment to him and the work that he's doing. And it will hinder, cause jealousies and frictions among brethren. Then there's something else to say about that. I don't totally agree with the brethren who have decided that American churches should never under any circumstance support a native preacher in some other country. For the simple reason that the Bible's teaching on this subject doesn't have boundaries around it. Those that preach the gospel should live with the gospel. And there are times and circumstances when you have to strike while the iron is hot. When the door is open, you have to go in. It's a lot easier to go in while it's open than it is after it's closed. And so there are countries in the world right now, third world countries, where people are receptive to the gospel. We're going to hear about India tomorrow. That's another place where there's a great open door and much good can be done and has been done. And the Philippines, of course, still remains to be such. And so there needs something to be said about putting tools in the hands of the people who are preaching the gospel in these places while the door's open. I don't totally agree with that attitude that said it's a matter of judgment. And I recognize the danger of over-supporting men. And I do believe that there has been damage done by American dollars in some places. And when men are supported to preach in these places, the subjects of support ought never to even be brought up when you're trying to teach somebody the gospel of Christ. Sometimes denominational preachers have been won to Christ. I know of some who have obeyed the gospel with great sacrifice. Brother Ron mentioned some yesterday. I remember being in a place called Romblon one time, one of the islands, preaching. And I was introduced to a man who had just been baptized just before I got there. And I was told that he was a preacher in a denominational church. And he lived there at that place. He had a house. The church that he's preaching for, the denomination he worked with, they supplied him a house and a salary and some fringe benefits. Not like we have here, but he had some. And he had 9 children. During the course of the meeting, his wife was baptized. And I said to him, "What's going to happen to you when the headquarters of your denomination finds out what you've done?" He said, "Well, they'll kick me out." Well, the last day of the meeting, he came to me and he said, "They find out and they send me a telegram today. They gave me a week to vacate the house." I said, "What are you going to do?" "Well," he said, "I'm going to go to Ajunga," and that's about 30 kilometers up the way, "to my cousin's house," and said, "My wife and my 9 children are going to stay in my cousin's house while I go home with Brother Minor and study the Bible with him for a while." Ron mentioned Brother Minor yesterday. And that's what he did. He came back to that place. He drove a cab for a while, started a congregation at one end of the city, and then after a while he started another one in the other end of the city. And he worked for several years without a dime of American support. Now, don't tell me a fellow who was willing to do that did it for money. Don't tell me that. I'm not going to listen to that. These men are convicted when they make that kind of sacrifice to obey the gospel of Christ and work at whatever they can. I tell you, if you're supporting men in other places, you need to require of them regular reports of their work. And those of you who work in other places, make your supports brief. If you're going to send a 3 or 4 page report, nobody but the elders are going to read them. They may post them up on the bulletin board along with a whole string of other reports, but they're not going to get read unless it's brief. And you need to make them newsy. Newsy about the work. I've seen reports that were more about the family dog than there were about the work that was being done. Things all about the family. No, tell about the work. That's what the brethren supporting you about. There may be incidents about your family you want to mention, something of that nature. But talk about the work they're supporting you to do. And send reports. You ought not have to be required to send a report. Somebody is good enough to support you in preaching the gospel. Stay in touch with them. Let them know what's going on. They have a right to know. And you have an obligation to tell them. I've seen gospel preachers in other countries arouse suspicion. Because when they do report, every report has an appeal in it for some emergency beyond the normal support that they receive monthly. And after a while, if you keep doing that, brethren are going to decide you're dishonest. They may not know all the circumstances. And what you describe may be perfectly legitimate, but the brethren will wonder, They don't know about that. And the end result of that in several cases that I know about has been the loss of support by some men for doing that very thing. A few years ago, there's a preacher down in Mindanao that wrote a letter. In fact, it was a tearjerker. And they're cons. Let me tell you, there are cons in some other countries who can write a letter that will tear your heart out. And every word of it will be a lie. This fellow wrote a letter and sent it to number. He had a directory of churches. I don't know how he got a hold of it, but he had a directory of churches in this country. And he sent letters out all over the country and gave my name as a reference. And in the letter he said that I had baptized him. And of course that wasn't so. He had already been baptized when Cecil Willis and I went to a place for a lecture program at Pagadian City. And he was one of the speakers on the program. He had a picture of himself made with Cecil Willis and me. And he had copies of that made and sent that along with this letter, you know, as if that were an endorsement. And this letter he wrote, he told about how he was in an area where there were Muslim rebels. And they had come in and burned out his house at night. And he and his family had escaped only with the clothes on their back, their night clothes. That's all they had. Lost everything, they said, the house, everything. Somehow, though, he managed to salvage a typewriter and that church directory. And that picture of him with Cecil Willis and me managed to survive the fire. It was a con. And I had, there's some brethren who called me about it. I don't know how many received it who didn't call me, but I think I counted over 30 places that called me and asked me about him. And some of them had already sent him money, and some of them a sizable amount of money. And I had sadly to tell them that it was a con. Be careful. But now before you decide to ban a whole country, and decide that because there are some men who are scalawags in those countries that we're not going to support anybody over there anymore, may I remind you that scalawags are not limited to foreign countries. We've had a few of them here in this country. Men who can't keep their hands off of the women. And they're dishonest about money, or they have an addiction of some kind. Or they accept support from brethren in a place that's far distant. Nobody ever gets to go through there and even look at the work. And they're living pretty well, but there's not much work going on. We've got some of those here too. So don't ban a whole country because there are a few bad eggs in those places that need to be smoked out. Now, let me say just a little bit about short-term trips. A number of brethren have made short-term trips to Belize, and that's been mentioned here, to Eastern European countries, Russia, the Philippines, Nigeria, South Africa, and a number of other countries where men go and stay usually about a month to 6 weeks. What about that? Brethren have said, well, is that a good use of the Lord's money? Well, it can be, and most of the time I think is. When you stop to figure out how much it costs for a man to go and spend a month or 6 weeks preaching in an area where he may preach any number of times while he's there, and then you compare that to how much churches are spending for gospel meetings when they pay the transportation for a preacher to come from wherever he lives and pay for his expenses while he's there and pay him for his work while he's preaching in that meeting. And you multiply that by about 4 to 6 weeks, the expense involved, and it's not all that much when you stop and think about it in those terms. What can be accomplished in short-term trips? A great deal can be accomplished. There are places where there are native preachers who need to be helped, and you can have training classes, training programs for them. A good bit of that's been done, to my knowledge, in the Philippines and in Nigeria, In South Africa, I had a part in a preacher training program in South Africa. We had several preachers to come to that, and I taught classes on just about everything you could think of, at least I thought so in the 2 weeks that we were there. Much good can be accomplished in that. You give them extra tools to work with, and it enables them to work among their own people. They live there. They live in the culture. And so if you can better equip them for the work that they're doing, then you've done them service, a favor in doing so. I do believe short-term trips are good if you have faithful men to go who are capable of doing the work, have something to offer when you get there that will be useful to the brethren, then I do believe with all my heart that that's a valuable thing to do. I want to say just a little bit, too, before I quit, about the influence of gospel papers in other countries. The door that was opened in Italy was a result of a preacher in Germany who knew the name of a couple of preachers in Italy who had been converted by the liberals years ago and had become disillusioned with them. And he made a trip to Rome, and he gave them copies of Searching the Scriptures and Truth magazine. And they got to reading these magazines and decided that the problems that they had been having with the institutional folks were the same problems that we were having here. So they wrote an article called From Italy with Sadness, and they sent it to me. They also sent it to the editors of other papers. I believe Brother Willis got the same article. It was sent to the preceptor. And these other brethren had the same problem I did. I didn't know these men. I didn't know whether they were on the level or not, so I decided to correspond with them and did, and found out in the process of it that they had gone through some of the same experiences there that we had here with institutional brethren. So I said, what can we do to come and help? Is there any way we can help? And they wrote me back, they said, sir, if by help you mean come over here and tell us what to do, no, thank you, sir. We've already had that experience with Americans. But they decided that we could help them, cooperate, and we went, made trips. Several others have gone since that time, and so a door was opened in that place as a result of gospel papers. There was a brother in the book that said India, but that's a misprint. That should have been Nigeria. There was a brother in Nigeria who wrote me a letter, and he said he had left the institutional brethren. He said he got to studying with some of the faithful brethren over there. He said what prompted him to do that was that the institutional people over there had told him that there were only 24 anti-churches in the United States. And he said somebody put a copy of Searching the Scriptures in his hands, and he counted 150 advertisements from conservative churches in the back of that magazine, and he said, I figured that they lied to me. And if they'd lied to me about that, I might need to study some other things, and so that opened the door. So even the ads are teaching. Some brethren here get disillusioned with the paper. They say, phooey on the papers. All they want to do is argue. And that's not so. But at any rate, brethren want to throw up their hands and think, well, we don't need these print papers anymore. I want to tell you something. Print papers in foreign countries do good. I have seen in the Philippines, I have seen copies of Searching the Scriptures and Truth magazine pass through so many hands, the covers were worn off of them. Ron's been there, he knows. And the same thing's true in other countries. These are passed from hand to hand, from people to people, and they learn the truth. I've had people tell me they learned the truth and obeyed the gospel as a result of that, some paper being placed in their hand. And not only that, but they use material out of them. They outline articles and make sermons out of them. Ask Rody, he knows. So the gospel papers have a good part to play. And those of us who write in them need to take that to heart and remember that when we write something, that there are far-reaching consequences from what we say and what we do. And that somebody on the other side of the world that you don't even know, that speaks a different language for you and is a different color than you are, may be reading that and benefited by it. Now, it could well be. I've told brethren in other countries where the truth is flourishing. That the day may well come where they're going to have to come to the United States and evangelize us. And that always takes them by surprise. But what is this lectureship all about this week? Can Christianity survive in America? What have we been talking about all week? And in line with what Brother Waldron said last night, and I agreed completely with what he said, the time may come when you can't find a New Testament Christian in this country. That doesn't mean the kingdom of God is going out of business, because the seed is the word, and it's imperishable, incorruptible. It will survive. And as long as that seed of the gospel can survive, if somebody plants it in an honest heart 500 years from now, it'll germinate and bear fruit. But the fact may remain, the fact remains that as we become more worldly, as we become more apathetic, as we become more doctrinally unsound here, the time may well come when a Rodigampod or a brother from South Africa or from Belize or from Germany or from some other country may have to come over here, learn our language, adjust to our customs and culture, and preach the gospel to us and rescue us. Could be. What do you think? The blessed gospel is for all. It may be a means of our own survival to see that the gospel is preached everywhere in the world, that we have an open door to do it. And while those doors are open, may the Lord help us to find enough men with a fire shut up in their bones who will go and preach and save the lost. Thank you for listening to what I had to say.